In Perek Dalid, we spent some time last week talking about what did we talk about last week?
I heard that you were talking about the Aaron.
I heard that I was talking about the Aaron.
That's right.
So that is correct. There is a whole discussion about the Aaron that they took into battle. They went and took the Aaron Brit Hashem Tzvaot Yosheva Kuvim. They went and took the Aaron out of the Mishkan in Shiloh, brought it into the battlefield. We spent some time discussing what that meant. Was that a function of, what was the chait? Was it a function of the fact that they took the Ark, an unprecedented, unheard of concept, that they just took the Ark of the Covenant into the battlefield? Or was it a little more subtle, in the sense that they always took an ark of some kind into the battlefield with them, as a kind of symbol of the role of Hashem, the speech of the Kohanim to them at the beginning of every battle. And then in this particular case, they decided to take the, call it the real Aaron, the upgrade. And they didn't want the smaller stand-in. And that's what Rashi says. If you remember Rashi in Chumash, in Dvarim says that the Aaron that Moshe had made when he went up the mountain, the first time, when after Chet Egel, it's actually this week's Parsha, and he comes back with the Luchos, he made an Aaron Atzei Shittim, he made an Aaron out of wood, into which he put the Luchos temporarily, until he was able to build the Mishkan, and then he had the real Aaron in which to put the Luchot, and that's then the question became what happened to the original Aaron. So Rashi says it was maintained, used in battle whenever they went into battle, except in this one instance when they took the quote-unquote the wrong Ark and therefore it was taken captive. Or, says the Ramban, it was temporary and therefore it was destroyed. There's even a shita I shared with you that says that actually this is there's only ever one Aaron, and they took this one Aaron that was made out of wood and used it, inlaid it, and outlaid it with gold, and it became the Aaron of the Brit. And so, either according to the Ramban or according to, I think it was the Rashbam who we saw, right? Either way, or some of the other Mefarshim, either way, the it's actually the second opinion in the Ramban. Either way, except for Rashi, these opinions essentially argue that they never took an ark into, they never took an Aaron into battle. Except here, it was a remarkable and outlandish concept, and they took this Aaron and they brought it into battle. On the other hand, I suggested to you that there are indications, and there is evidence in Chumash, that the Pshat actually may lie with Rashi. That seems to indicate that when they went into battle, at least whether every time or not, but certainly on some kind of a regular basis, whenever they went into battle, they took some kind of Aaron with them. Precedent is set in Chumash and Bamidbar. We saw the Pesukim, Ahi b'nisoa ha'aron, v'yomo Moshe, kumu Hashem, v'yafutsu oivecha, v'yanusu mesanecha mipanecha. It's a war cry. And every Aaron would gravel, war cry, God scatter your enemies before you. Uvenucho, when the Aaron rested, Yomar Shuva Yisrael, Rivavot Alfei Yisrael, that the Shuva Hashem Rivavot Alfei Yisrael, God returned the myriads and 10,000s of Israelites to their home safely. So that essentially, the notion that whenever they went into war, they took the Aaron with them as a reflection of the Shekhinah. Obviously, in the Midbar, they have the Aaron with the Kruvim. Once they entered into the land of Israel and put that Aaron in its permanent home in the Mishkan, so that role could have been served by some other Aaron, the smaller Aaron, the Aaron Eitz, if they still had it. And that's essentially where we left off. There are other indications as well that on a regular basis there was some kind of indication that the Shekhinah, when they went into battle, there was some notion that the battlefield was to be a place of heightened sensitivity to Kedusha. What does that mean? It means that Dafka, of all places, you would think that in the midst of the battlefields of war, that would be a place where the Torah would be a little bit more lax or understanding, that some of our standards of behavior may fall away. After all, battle is a life and death intense experience. In fact, that's to some degree that's the concept behind the notion of the Eshet Yifat Tor, beginning of Parshat Ki Tetzeh, where it talks about if you go to war and you see a beautiful woman and you take her as a captive, and what you must do in order to be able to keep her. The whole mitzvah of Eshet Yifat Tor, which is a very strange mitzvah, and Rashi points out that this entire mitzvah is Lo Dibar Torah Ela Keneged Yetzer Hara. This whole mitzvah is a kind of concession to the Yetzer Hara. But the Mefarshim explained that that's precisely because we're talking about a battlefield. We're talking about war. The Torah understood that war is so intense that sometimes there's a behavioral standard that would be understandable if it was relaxed a little bit, because there's so many other intensities that go on in the moment of battle. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is that whenever you go to war, conceptually, the notion of an army of Hashem, the army of God, of Israel, fighting in God's name, Elav Recha ve'Elav Asusim, Anachnu B'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Nazkir, fighting in God's name, there is an element of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem that is carried when in your behavior. Your behavior lacks a moral backbone, a moral compass, then you're fighting in God's name. That could be even more problematic than a daily life. Daily life, you know, so you invoke God's name every time you talk to somebody, and therefore if you speak inappropriately or you behave inappropriately, we talk about Echil Hashem, but essentially it's not as significant a moment, whereas in the battlefield, when you're coming as an army of God, as an army of the Jewish people, you're coming to represent God, your behavior is even more critical, because you are the representatives of Tzivot Hashem in your encounter with the world around you. And so we find a very interesting halacha, for example, you'll forgive the mundane subject matter of this mitzvah for now, but if you take a look at Dvarim Chav Gimel, all the laws of war are in Parshat Shoftim and Ki Tetzeh. We look in Pasuk Chav Gimel. Perek Chav Gimel, starting with Pasuk Yud. Ki tetze machane al oivecha. Go to war. And machane is always a camp, a military camp. Ki tetze machane al oivecha. You go to war against your enemies. V'nishmarta mikol davara. You have to guard yourself against any kind of immoral or any kind of inappropriate behavior. If a person, for example, is reached a point where they have tumah caused by a seminal discharge at night, whatever is going on in their minds, they are now tameh. They can't bring that tumah into the camp. He has to go to the mikveh before evening, once he goes to the mikveh, then he can go back into the camp But the camp is in the middle of battle. You have to maintain a state of tahara. You have to maintain a state of purity. Purity and kedusha are inherently interconnected. V'yad yalacha michutz l'machane v'yatzat Hashem machutz v'yated tiyalacha al azanecha v'yav v'shiftecha chutz v'chafarta ba v'shavta v'chisita tzeatecha. Very mundane conversation about building outhouses for the army. But essentially, the Torah says you have to make sure that you address bodily functions in a manner that's outside the camp, that doesn't defile the camp, and that maintains a semblance and a state of tahara and kedusha in the camp of Israel. Why is it necessary to maintain this kind of enhanced level of tahara, purity, and kedusha in the military camp? Pasuk Tetvav, Ki Hashem Elokecha mitalech bekerev machanecha. Because you go to war, God is going with you. God is in your presence. To save you, to give your enemies into your hands. And therefore your camp, the military camp, needs to maintain a state of Kedusha. God shouldn't see amongst your camp a behavior that is inappropriate. And retract, we go back, leave you. Because you don't want to be in a state where you go to war and the Shekhinah is not with you. Correct? You want to be in a state where the Shekhinah is in your midst. And you go to war and you behave in such a way that you force the Shekhinah out, then you're fighting on your own. That's exactly what Moshe said to Bnei Yisrael, to the Mapilim by Chet Meraglim, after they wanted to go up on their own. And the Pasuk says, Moshe and the Aaron didn't move. They went without the Shekhinah. You go to war without God's assistance, you take your chances because you're on your own. And it's interesting, on this Pasuk of Vayah Machanecha Kadosh, Ki Hashem Elokecha Mitalech Bekerev Machanecha, God is in your midst, walking in your amongst you. This, on this Pasuk, interestingly enough, if you have that source page that I gave you last week, there's an extra copy of it. It's imbalanced. There's a couple of extra on this set. That's all right. So the Rashbam says in source 5, the Rashbam says, what does it mean, Hashem Elokecha mitalech bekerev machanecha, that Hashem is walking in your midst? Shagam Aaron shebot Torah ayayotze imahem lemilchama, because they took the Aaron with them into war. Kidachtiv uklea kodesh v'chatzotzot ha'tzuah b'yado. So the Rashbam understood this pasuk as a reference to, in support of Rashi's contention, that every time they went to war, they took the Aron with them. Not the Aron, but an Aron, because the sense of the presence of the Shekhinah was with them. So that's sort of a postscript to last week's discussion, where we suggested that this notion that they actually took the Aron with them into the camp is not so outlandish. It's not so so crazy. It seems to be based on a precedent, at least from the Torah's perspective, that was some kind of common routine. The difference being that they, in this particular story, clearly the Aron wasn't enough for them, and so when they were losing the battle, they went and took the Aron. Right? They went and took the Aron out of the Kodesh HaKadosh. And the result was
not good.
They were massacred.
Right. The result was a massacre that left 4,000 on the first day, 30,000 on the second day, plus the Kohanim and the women and the young girls and the destruction of cities and ultimately the fall of Shiloh. And so if you add to the 34,000 Israelites, and you add to that the civilian non-combatant population of the Kohanim and the women, so we're now up to numbers that may reach 45,000, 50,000. 50,000 plus the incursion into the heartland of the land of Israel and the fall of Shiloh. All because, ostensibly, They took the Aron, or rephrase it, all because, let's take Rashi's opinion, why did all of this happen? Because they took
The Aron into battle.
Because they took the wrong Aron. Because they took the wrong Aron. Right. So according to the Ramban, Aron has no place in battle ever. So maybe the level of the chet increases. It's a whole new concept. But according to Rashi, the level of the chet that we're talking about is one in which they're used to taking the Aron into battle, but in this particular case, they took the Aron out of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So it's true, the Aron out of the Kodesh HaKodeshim is not a good thing. But by in itself, it's hard to understand that just by the fact that they took the wrong Aron into battle was the catalyst for destruction and devastation that is unprecedented at that time, and that ultimately remains a symbol of the Churban for generations to come. So I'm looking for something that would take this notion of the Aron that they took into battle and understand that the depth of its chet in a context that makes sense for the level of destruction that ensued. Is it just the fact that they took the Aron? Or was there in fact something more significant here, that taking the Aron became the straw to break the camel's back, or even more significant a chet than there was before? And so that's part of where, I think that's essentially where we had left off. So at least some of the Mefarshim put the numbers on here. Did not. I apologize for that. The Ramban, and I meant to put it on the source page. I apologize for that. No, it's not here. Okay, I apologize. This is Ramban that makes a very interesting observation, and he suggests that if we take the 34,000, I think it's either Ramban or Radak, if we take the 34,000 that die in battle, and we add to that the number of non-combatants, the women and the children and the Kohanim, not in impossible parallel to reach, or not an impossible number, to reach something to the effect of 50,000. Why is that number significant? So the Radak suggests in the beginning of the story that the number 50,000 at the beginning is a tell, it's a point, it's an indication that the story of this Aron is directly connected to something else, to another story that's also related to a tragedy of 50,000. In other words, the Radak suggests that the number at the beginning is already a remez, it's a hint, to another part of the story that's not in the text, but that's there in a kind of a pointed fashion. To what am I cryptically referring? So Radak says, take a look at the end of the story. What's the end of the story? Start at Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet is the fall of the Battle of Ebenezer. So, we'll just give a brief overview of the structure of this part of the Sefer. They go to war. The war ends in, or the events of the war with the Aron being taken is in Pasuk Yud, or Yud Aleph. And then we have the return of this messenger who comes running back to the Mishkan or to Eli to tell him that the Aaron was captured and the sons of Eli were killed. The result is that Eli dies from the shock, part of the story that we read once before.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, there is Aaron itself is taken into exile. Pasuk of Gimel, Ki Nilkach Aaron Elokim. Perak He is a digression. What's the digression? It shifts our focus to the story of the Aaron. So Perak He begins, Uflishtim Lakuit Aaron Elokim Vayavo Me'evan Ezer Ashdoda. The Uflishtim took this Aaron and they took it down to Ashdod. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
They took this Aaron and they put it in their temple. The temple to Dagon. We'll talk about who Dagon was and the deities of this pagan, the pagan deities of the Plishtim. But in the meantime, they put it in Ashdod. And in the palace, in the temple of Dagon, and unfortunately, what ensues is not good, and the idol of Dagon collapses. So the Aaron is sitting there in this temple, and before you know it, the great big idol of Dagon falls. So they put it back, and it falls again. Anyway, we're going to get to the story in greater detail. But if you take a look at Pasuk Vav, ותכבד יד השם אל האשדודים וישימם ויח אותם בתחומים את אשדוד ואת גבוליה. God, what he does to the deity, to the idol of the Plishtim is only part of the story. The result is he smites the people with some kind of plague of an intestinal ailment. Afalim, tchorim, some kind of intestinal ailment. That's what they translate it as, yeah. But I think it's more significant or more severe. Bleeding and stomachs exploding and all kinds of... Well, when we get there, it's not something for a post-dinner conversation.
Charming
but
stuff.
What?
Charming
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty yucky. Vayu'u anshei Ashdod kichen, so they said, they said the Aaron can't stay here. It's got to go. So again, what happened? They took the Aaron and they put it into the temple next to the idol of Dagon. The idol of Dagon collapsed. The people were smitten with a plague. So they took out the Aaron and they said, "This is too much for us." So they sent it. Where do they send it? They sent it to the next city. וישלחו ויעשו את כל שני פלישתים אליהם ויאמרו מה נעשה לארון אלוקי ישראל ויאמרו גת יסוב ארון אלוקי ישראל. So they send it to Gat. Starts in Ashdod, wreaks havoc in Ashdod, they send it to the next Plishti city, they send it to Gat. And then what happens to Gat? They put it in the temple together with the gods, the temple, the idol collapses, they are smitten with Chorim. And again, they're smitten with this Pasuk Tet, again, they're smitten with some kind of intestinal ailment, and they're all suffering now. So it went from Ashdod to Gat. So what do they do after it went to Gat? So they send it to the next Plishti city. So we can't handle this thing. This is too heavy for us, too intense. Every time this Aaron comes somewhere, the results are not good. You take it. It's like a hot potato. Everybody's trying to pass it on from one to the other. So it comes to Ekron, and the Ekronim declare, oh, this Aaron's come to us to kill us. This ark has come here to kill us. So they gather together all the Sinai Plishtim, and they now have a big conference. So by the time it gets to the third city, third time lucky, they finally figure out that this Aaron is too hot for it for them to handle. And there's a medrash that says that the Aaron carries itself. Familiar with the medrash? But the Kohanim would carry the Aron. Aron nosei et atzmo. The Ark carries itself. Where is it relevant? It's relevant to the story in Sefer Shmuel Bet, where David tries to move the Aron from Kiryat Yarim to Yerushalayim, and he puts it on a wagon, and as the wagon is driving up the hillside, the wagon begins to lose a wheel, and the Kohanim who were there, right, Uzzah and Peretz, grab hold of the Aron in order to prevent it from falling. And the result is something analogous to the story of Nadav and Avihu. It's actually the Haftorah Parshat Shmini. And they die. So there Chazal say, what did they do wrong? All they did was try to protect the Aron from falling. Mm-hmm. Aron was at that small. Everybody knew the Aron could take care of itself. He didn't need to reach out and grab the Aron. The Aron is quite capable of taking care of itself. And this story, I think, is the pshat of what that means. The Aron is going to war with the Plishtim. Right? Wherever the Aron goes, the result is
destruction
for the Plishtim. So much so that the Plishtim are then going to send it back because they can't handle this thing. The Aron can take care of itself. I mean, obviously, it's Rabbanu Shlolem's Shechina involved here, but the notion that you don't need to protect the Aron. The Aron is quite capable of protecting itself.
It's interesting they don't try and destroy the Aron. They just try and get rid of it and move it on somewhere
else. Remember what they said in battle. To them, this is a pagan cultures are very interesting. They are not unreligious. They're in fact very religious. The notion of a pantheon of gods is such that you have to have respect for the power of any deity that has proven itself. So when the Plishtim were fighting in the battlefield, what did they say? When the Plishtim were fighting in the battlefield and saw the Aron with its Kruvim, what did they say?
Here's the Aron on our side. Help Bnei Shalom get out of it. Here's the gods that help Bnei Shalom get out of it.
That's exactly right. These are the gods that, right, be careful. These are the gods that saved it. So whether they win the war or lose the war, they still recognize that in their minds these Kruvim are God. So where do you put a box with two gods on top of it that just you were victorious over them? So in the ancient world of pagan mentality, when two armies go to war, who's fighting in this war? The soldiers are only representatives. Right. Who's fighting?
The two gods.
The gods. And whichever side is victorious, their god is victorious over the god of the other. Right. So where are you going to put the Aron? With its Kruvim atop of it?
Next
to your God. You're going to put it into your temple because it's as homage to the power of your God to overpower the God of the other, right? You're not going to declare that it's a worthless piece of junk, it's just gold and meaningless, right? You value this, you think this is the deity, so you take it, you put it into your idols, into your temple, and you put the Aron next to it. Right? Dagon was a big, tall god. It was a big, tall statue. So this little box with these two little tiny kruvim, right, put it in its place. You stick it next to it, and
it wasn't that small, though.
The Aron? It's not that big.
It's not that small either.
In relative terms, the Aron is what, 2.5 amot, the amma high, an amma and a half high, within the kruvim another.
But that's like 4 foot tall.
Okay, Dagon is a humongous statue. Dagon was, remember, the palace of. That Shimshon destroyed,
mm-hmm.
built on columns. These things were huge. Be that as it may, the end result is they learn a lesson. We're going to learn this story in more depth next go around, but they learn a lesson, and they learn the lesson that Aron is too hot a potato to deal with. So what do they do?
They have a convention what to do about it.
Right. They have a big convention what to do about it. They're all dying of this plague. In Pasuk Aleph, they're all Mumata Mavet B'chol Ir. There was a death plague in every city where this Aron came. V'hanashim asher lo metu hu kupat tchorim. Whoever didn't die was smitten with these tchorim, whatever, hemorrhoids or some kind of disease, intestinal disease. Vatal Shavata Ir HaShemayim. So they're all, you know, they're either dying or smitten. They're, but they're suffering tremendously. We have no idea how many Plishtim die in the process. We just know that every city this Aaron went to, the Plishtim are dying. And after 7 months of this, they finally figured out this can't work. Perek Vav, Vayi Aaron Hashem b'shtei Plishtim shiva chodeshim. The Aaron sat there for 7 months, going from city to city, causing plague after plague. And finally, they get everybody together. Vayiku Plishtim, Lakoanim, Lakosmim. They bring everybody together, and they said, "Ma nasel Aaron Hashem? Hodiyunu b'men nishachenu l'mkomo." They said, "Now, what do we do with this Aaron? How do we get it home? How do we get it back? We can't handle this anymore. Every time this Aaron shows up in another city, there's a plague. We need to, you know, want a plague. What's the expression? A plague on both your houses? Send it back to the Israelites. Let it plague them for a change." Now, what's the problem? Now, think pagan. I know, it's hard to do. But what's the problem? They've captured this Aaron. They have in their minds tortured the god or gods of Israel. And the gods of Israel, in their minds, are fighting back. So they can't just take this Aaron and drop it at the doorstep of some Israelite home and say, "Thank you very much, goodbye." Because they've been torturing this thing for 7 months. So they need to send it back, but to send it back, they need to send it back with
some kind of peace offering.
Peace offering. Right? Some kind of peace offering. Think pagan. Some kind of peace offering. So what do they do? If you want to send back the Aaron, I'm reading now in Perek Vav Pasuk Gimel. If you're going to send back this Aaron, al tishalchu oto bekam. Don't send it back empty-handed. Kishev tishivu lo asham. You have to pay back some kind of a compensation, some kind of a guilt offering. Az terafu, then you'll be healed. Yenadal lechem lama lo tasu yadam mikem. And you'll know why his hand has not removed from you. So v'yum ma asham asher nashivu lo. What do we send back? So they said the following. Let's say, how many cities, Plishti cities, are there, and Plishti governors? There's five main Arei Plishtim, and five Sarnei Plishtim. Sarnei Plishtim are the governors. And they keep sending this Aaron from house to city to city, but the plagues don't stop, right? The plagues keep going. Mm-hmm. So they decide, okay, let's send back this peace offering. What's the peace offering? For each of the five cities, Chamisha Tchorei Zahav, v'chamisha achbarei Zahav. Let's send back gold statues of what we were plagued with. So five gold mice, rats, achbarei Zahav. Probably this plague had some kind of animal origin, right? A plague of rats that then led to an intestinal plague. Right? It's not uncommon. And then five plagues that looked like five golden statues that looked like whatever it was that they were plagued with. Tchorim. Don't know what they look like. I don't want to know what they look like. But whatever it was, they made them out of gold, and they stuck them together with yarn, and they sent it back. It's one plague to everybody, right? The rats and the tchorim, it's all one interconnected plague.
Where does it mention the rats?
It doesn't. So you have to put all these pieces of the story together. Right? Mm-hmm. It just talks about the symptom. Now we're talking about what brought about the... V'asitem tzalmei tchorechem v'tzalmei achborechem amashchitim et ha'aretz. So make gold images of the tchorim and the achbarim that are destroying the land. So you see the focus. Unitatem l'Elohei Yisrael kavod. Send it back to the God of Israel, gods of Israel as kavod. Maybe if you send back these these golden rats and golden tchorim, maybe God will forgive you and remove this plague. Why should you harden your heart the way Egypt hardened theirs? We're going to read this story again in a couple of weeks. Right? Now, this is where you really see the notion that the Aron carries itself. Their suggestion here is very clever. It says, where are you going to turn the Aron back? Where are you going to return the Aron? With these Tchorim and with these Achbarim, where are you going to send it? So the logical place is Shiloh. But Shiloh doesn't exist anymore. So you can't send it back to Shiloh. So how do you decide where to send it?
You don't. You just let it go.
Right. You don't. Just let it go. And see where it'll carry itself. Hence Chazal's statement, Aron nosei et atzmo. So that's what they do. V'ata k'chu v'asu agala chadasha achat u'shtei parot alot asher lo alahem ol v'asartem et haparot ba'agala v'ashivotem b'nehem me'achoyehem abayit. There's all test here. I won't go through the details, but basically they take a wagon and they take nursing calves that are nursing from their mothers, and they take the mothers and they tie up the nursing mothers in the at the place of origin, and they tie the agala with the aron to the calf, and they send them off. What's the theory? I want to see if this it's a test. I want to see if this aron really is intelligent deity. I want to see if this Aaron really is the source of the problem. So it's a test. If by normal rules of nature, by normal instincts of nature, nursing calves with the brain, whatever they call it for cows, mooing mothers, cows tied up, where are the calves going to go naturally?
Back to their mothers.
Back to their mothers. Whereas if they end up going into the Israelites, then they know that the Aaron is directing. Ulekachtem et pasuk chet, ulekachtem et Aaron Hashem, unetatem oto el agala. Take the ark, put it into the wagon. Et klei hazahav asher hashevotem lo Hashem tasimu ba'argaz mitzido. Take all these golden mice, rats, tchorim, whatever they are, and stick them into the box. Veshilachtem oto valach. If it, remember, they're going from the south, north. So from Ashdod, or from the cities of the Plishtim, you head due north, you end up, or due northeast, into the camp, into Israel, the first place they get to is Beit Shemesh. So if it goes straight to Beit Shemesh, then they know, then they know that this all was the cause, was caused by God of Israel. If not, if the calves go back to its mother, then you know that it's not the God of Israel that's in charge here. It was just our luck that the rats came and brought disease. You follow what's going on? So they return the ark. They took two parot, put them into the agala. Actually, the other way around. The cows, the nursing mothers were carrying the wagon. Sorry, I made a mistake before. It's the other way around. The nursing mothers are pulling the wagon. The calves are locked up in the house. So it's the maternal instinct that's being tested here. They put the aron into the agala. Ve'et ha'argaz. It's okay. Don't worry about it. They put all the a big casket, a big case with all the gold little statues. What happened to these parot who were carrying this wagon? Where did they go? They went back to Beit Shemesh. In a straight line, as straight as the crow flies, is the expression. Not right or left. They didn't deviate. The Sarnei Plishtim ochim acharem adgu b'chemesh, escorted behind by the Sarnei Plishtim. Now, so you have the picture. Mm-hmm. So what happened? The Aron was taken captive, went down to the plishtim. They sent it from city to city, and every city had stuck it into the temple. First thing that the Aron did was broke the Dagon statue, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Then they started a plague, brought about by the rats. Brought in the rats, brought in the animals, brought in the intestinal problems, tchomim, whatever else is going on. People are starting to die. This terrible plague is going from city to city. They keep moving the Aron from city to city, but the plague keeps going. Now they don't know what to do. So they don't know if it's a just incidental bad luck, or if it's actually the responsibility of this ark. They test it. They take the nursing mother cows, tie it to the agala, stick the aron on it, stick all of the tchomim and the achbarim, the made out of gold, there as well, send it on its way, keeping the two calves braying and crying in locked up, kalubabait. Instead of following the maternal instinct to go back to the calves, these two cows take this agala on a beeline straight to Beit Shemesh. Now we get to Beit Shemesh.
What kind of reception are these police team going to get in Beit Shemesh?
No, they're not. The cows are
Beit Shemesh, kotzrim k'tzir chitim ba'emek. In Beit Shemesh, they are harvesting. This is the part of the story I wanted to get to, but without the story in the middle, I don't realize what's going on. Vayisut enehem. What happened? They're standing outside in Beit Shemesh. It's the middle of the harvest. Right. It's 7 months after the battle. The middle of the harvest. They lift up their eyes. And lo and behold, what do they see?
The Aron.
Vayizu et ha'aron. They saw the Aron coming to Beit Shemesh on a wagon led by two cows without anybody driving it. Vayismichu li'ot. And they were rejoicing. Va'agala ba'al stei Yehoshua Beit HaShemeshi. This agala comes to the house of Yehoshua Beit Shemesh, v'tamotcha, and it stood there. V'sham even gdola. There was a big stone. What this stone is, we're going to reread this whole story again later. Later we'll talk about this even. V'yivaku et atzei agala. What do? They took apart the agala. The agala is made out of
wood.
They took apart the wood. When you take apart the wood, what do you have? Wood for
fire.
And you have et haparot elu ola l'Hashem. You have a big oven called a matzivah. You take the wood, you break it up, and you have firewood. So now you have mizbeach or matzivah. And now you even have what to bring as a korban because you have two parot that came back with it. And now they're all excited. They've got the aron back. So what do you do? The first thing you do when you get the aron back is you create a mini mishkan. You create a mini mizbeach. Right? You've got the aron has come back. The aron was the symbol of the mishkan. The aron comes walking back into Beit Shemesh. Obviously, the first thing you do is you create an entire mishkan structure around it. So you have an oven, you have the wood, you have the animals. What are you missing? Kohanim. והלוויים הורידו את ארון השם ואת ארגז השאיתו שבו כלי הזהב ושימו אל האבן הגדולה. The Kohanim came down, or the Levim came down, they took the Aron, they took the Argaz, they took the Klei Zahav, they put it all on this big stone. ואנשי בית שמש העלו עולות, and they begin to bring sacrifices. ויזבחו זבחים ויאמרו להשם, and they bring offerings to Hashem on that day. It's a big simcha, it's a big joy. They're celebrating. The Aron's come back. They build a mizbeach to the Aron. They're back in business. Back in business. V'chamisha sarnei plishtim ra'u. What did the sarnei plishtim, these plishtim governors, generals do? They saw what was going on. They realized that the Aron had gone home. V'yeshivu ekron b'yomahu. They went home. Fine. End of the story, right? Now, what's the most important piece of information the Navi now has to share with us?
Ve'ele tchorei azahav asher eshivu plishtim asham la'ashem.
How many golden tchorim did they return? Did they bring back? La Ashdod achad, la Aza achad, la Ashkelon achad, la Gat achad, la Akron achad. One giant tchor zahav. Don't ask what a tchor is. I have no idea. But one giant golden something per city. It almost reads like a shira. La Ashdod echad, la Aza echad, la Ashkelon echad, la Gat echad, la Akron echad. Right, we're not finished. The Achbere Azahav. Now, how many golden rats? This is important stuff, right? I need to know how many golden rats they sent back. The Achbere Azahav Mispar. Kol arei plishtim lechameshet hasranim meir mifza viad kofer aprazi viad avela gdola asher nicho le'ataron Hashem ad yom hazeh b'stei Yeshua bet haShemshi. They had one golden rat per suburb, per little municipality. Obviously, each seren, each governor is in charge of one major area, but those major areas, lehavdil, much like St. Louis, made up of multiple municipalities or little villages. And so they had one golden achbar per. Doesn't tell us how many there were. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's the end of the story. And then they get walloped. Vayach ba'anshei Beit Shemesh.
Who?
God smote the people of Beit Shemesh. Remember, the Aron in Ashdod and in Gat and Ashkelon brought about terrible plague. Death in each city. Comes to Beit Shemesh, what did God do? Smote the people of Beit Shemesh. Because they dared look at the Ark of God.
But what were they supposed to do?
That's my question. That's exactly the question. But that's what the pasuk says. Ki ra'u ba'aron Hashem.
Does this mean they looked at it or they looked inside of it? Because there's a difference.
So Harrison Ford claims that they looked inside it. Because in the very last scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is a very powerful movie, by the way, and that last scene, by the way, I believe, is built on this perek. You ever see the movie?
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie, you're going to miss this, but that's okay. You can go out and see the movie. I don't mind. It's a very good movie. A couple of scenes in there you can do without, but otherwise it's a good movie. But what happens, it's a very powerful sense of Kedusha. If you want to really understand what the Torah's concept of Kedusha is, it's a really powerful scene where they bring this they're all Nazis looking for the Ark, right? And Harrison Ford is this guy. They bring this Ark, there's a bunch of Nazis bring the Ark, and they think it's got some magic power, exactly what happens here, right? They think it's got some magic power. And Harrison Ford, who understands, he's a historian, he knows Indiana Jones, he knows what's going on, he tells his girlfriend, whoever she is, don't look. Close your eyes. Don't look. And as they open, then they get this big Nazi dressed in the garb of the Kohen Gadol, and he recites Yukum Purkan, by the way, if you ever watch the movie, you'll see. Listen carefully to what he says in that broken Aramaic. He's reciting Yukum Purkan. Very interesting, because whoever wrote this movie knew enough about Jewish ritual to know that when do we recite Yukum Purkan? When do we today recite Yukum Purkan, written in the Middle Ages or something, right? When do we recite Yukum Purkan?
Before you put the Torah out there.
Before you open the Aron, before you take the Torah out. Yukum Purkan, we say...
Before you put it back.
Oh, before you put it back. Not Yukum Purkan, Brich Shmei. Okay. Sorry, I'm confusing. Right, he says Brich Shmei. In the movie, he says Brich Shmei, which is Aramaic, but we say it right before we take the Aron out. Mm-hmm. Take the Torah out. That's exactly what happens. And then they open the Ark, and out of what's inside the Ark comes this visible spirit, and it just turns everybody into skeletons. I have no idea what really took place in Beit Shemesh. But at that moment, in the movie, he says, don't look, close your eyes. That piece he got right, based on this pasuk. What's the plague for? Ki ra'u ba'aron. It says, they saw it, they looked at it. Now what they were supposed to do, we'll see. But vayach ba'am Shivim ish, chamishim elef ish. They killed, this plague smote, 70 people and 50,000 people. That's an odd way to write a number.
Yeah.
So there's a whole discussion, what is the 70 and 50,000? But the number is astronomical. 50,000 people died because they looked at the Aron. They were mourning. God smote them with a terrible plague. It's no different from what happened in Ashdod and in Gat and in Ashkelon and in Akron. Every city the ark went to, they were smitten by a plague. Now the city comes to Beit Shemesh, an Israelite city, and what happened? They were also smitten by a plague. Who can possibly stand against this holy God, this Aaron, this God, this Hashem Elokim HaKadosh Hazeh? It's interesting, right? Their concern is before God. Who's going to take this God away from us, from our midst? So they sent messengers to Kiryat Yarim. I don't know why Kiryat Yarim per se, but they knew what to do with it. They sent messengers saying, the Plishtim returned the Aron. Redu aluta alechem, come take it to you. We don't want it. So v'yavo anshei Kiryat Yarim. So the people of Kiryat Yarim came. V'yalu at Aron Hashem. They took the Aron. V'yavu oto abet Avinadav b'giva. They gave it. They put it into protection in the house of Avinadav in the Giva. That Elazar benot kiddushu lishmor et Aron Hashem, and they designated Elazar to protect the Aron, covered it, and protect it. What happened? 50,000 people died because they looked at the Aron. Remember the battle with Evan Ezer? They took the Aron out in plain view. How do I know they took the Aron out in plain view?
Because the Plishtim said, look at this.
Exactly, because the Plishtim are reacting to the Kruvim. So there too, they looked at the Aron. Doesn't say anything about the fact that they looked at the Aron in the beginning of the battle. Here, suddenly, Beit Shemesh, they looked at the Aron and what? Boom, 50,000 people died. 70 and 50,000. So, what the 70 and 50,000 is an interesting conversation. There's a medrash. There's a. Did I give you this for that? No, I didn't. See, I meant to put this on the page, and I didn't. Oh, so the Radak says exactly that. The Radak says the 70 sounds like the shivim zkenim, the elders. Right? How would you describe a plague that smote not just the population of Beit Shemesh, but the leadership of Beit Shemesh, or in fact starts with the leadership? So the leadership is like a Sanhedrin. 70 is a number, represents the leadership. So that's the language of the Radak, and I apologize you don't have it. But he says, Chaser Vav. Right? 70, it says, Shivim ish, Chamishim elef ish. What happened to the Vav? Shivim v'chamishim. So he says, the Vav is missing. It should say, v'chamishim. V'chamishim elef ish kamo. So he says, that's stylistic. Fine. And then he says, "V'Yonatan tirgem b'katal b'sabe amo, shivim gavra, u'b'kahala chamishim alfe gavra." You know, the Targum translates it as "smote amongst the sabe." Sabe means
the elders.
The elders, the kenim, 70, and amongst the kahala, meaning the kahal, the masses, 50,000. Then there's a medrash that says that it smote 70, but 70 that were shakul, that were equal in stature to 50,000. That's a hard medrash to understand. But on the pshat of it, you have the elders, leadership, and 50,000 people who died because they looked at the Aron. So clearly that's where Hollywood got their image from. But in the pshat of the story, what's the real reason why 50,000 people died in the pshat? Because they looked at the Aron. They looked at the Aron means the Aron is. They looked at the Aron. What does it tell you?
It's not covered.
It's not covered. It's open. Correct? So because the Aron is open, 50,000 people died?
Open in what sense?
Visible. Visual.
But not open, because it's a box.
Right,
box
right. Not open in terms of what's inside the box, but open meaning the kruvim, etc. Remember, you're not allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The box with the kruvim sits inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and hidden from view for good reason. We talked about that, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Why is the Aron hidden from view? Why is it that the Aron is inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and nobody can go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim except the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur?
Because that's where the Shechina rests.
Because that's partially where the Shechina, partially because that's where the Shechina rests, and you're not supposed to look at the Shechina. When Moshe is standing at the burning bush, he'll take his eyes off, take his shoes off. Right? This, we talk about the Kohanim, because Kohanim, all of these Minhagim come from the same source. The Kohanim of the Beis HaMikdash held their hands up and the Shechina's peering through their fingers, so therefore, what's the halacha? We don't look at
the
Kohanim. Right? So in the Beit HaMikdash, you were never allowed to look at the Kohanim because you were looking at the Shechina. It's like looking into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Today, we're not prohibited from looking at the Kohanim because we don't have the Shechina. But the notion of looking at the Shechina is a problem. Why? Why is looking at the Shechina's presence a problem? And I'm going to give you another quote. Umar'eh kvod Hashem ke'esh ochalet b'rosh ahar. The vision of the glory of Hashem was like a consuming fire at the top of the mountain. Why was it so terrible, so devastating to look at the Aron? Look at the Shechina.
It's such a different dimension. It represents a spiritual dimension that we don't comprehend.
Spiritual dimension we don't comprehend. We have to deserve it. We have to be on a certain level. True. Let's take it one step, maybe even one step down to maybe more earthly domains, more practical domains.
I think that's true. The Kruvim represent the Kruvim who stood at Gan Eden, and they were to keep people out from seeing finding the Eitz Hadaat.
Right, so in all the symbolism of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that we talked about once, I think, by Rosh Shabbat Shuvah one year, and all the symbolism of the Aron and the Kodesh HaKadoshim represents Gan Eden. So the Kruvim guarded access to Gan Eden, the Eitz HaChaim. The Torah is the Eitz HaChaim. The Kruvim guard access to the Eitz HaChaim. The Kruvim are not only the Kruvim on the Aron, but also there are Kruvim embroidered into the Parochet of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. All of that's true. And there's one more, much more basic element. When you take the Aron and you look at the Aron with the Kruvim on it, you run a terrible danger.
You talked about this.
Which is?
You make the mistake that the Plishtim made, that you think that the Kruvim are God.
Correct. You make the mistake the Plishtim made by thinking that the Kruvim are the deity. The Kruvim are a very dangerous artifact. The boundary between the creation of Kruvim and idolatry is microns thin. And it doesn't take much to cross that boundary. So when you're the Kohen Gadol and you're dressed in white instead of gold and you come in with Ktoret and you come in with humility and you come in with Tshuva and you come in with Kapara and you come in with Vidui, and for a moment you can glimpse the Kruvim because, okay, you've prepared yourself for it. When you take the Aron out into the battlefield, you've transformed the Aron from what's inside it to the center of the Aron, the primacy of the Aron, from what's inside it to what's on top of it. Ki ra'u ba'aron. They looked at the Aron. They looked at the Kruvim. You look at the Kruvim and the boundary between monotheism and idolatry is paper thin. Even that's the only half the picture. They did something here far worse.
It's disrespectful in some regard.
Because, even worse.
Sounds like they celebrated.
Because you already
celebrated. They were celebrating. I got the Aron back. If we got Beis HaMikdash back, we'd be celebrating too.
It was almost like the Golden Camp that they were celebrating. You know,
you're reducing Hashem to a physical object or location in that way.
All true. We're forgetting one really critical piece of this thing. Really critical. Go back to the psukim.
They kept all the gold.
Do that again?
I say they kept and took all the gold.
They didn't keep the gold. What did they do with all that gold? Where did they put all that gold?
They put it there next to the on the stone.
Right. That's right. I'll do that again. All right, they take this matzeva, they take this big rock, pasuk tet zayin, tet vav. They take the aron and the argaz with it. Vayasimu el even agdolah, and they put it on the great stone. So what's sitting on this stone? What's sitting inside this kodesh hakodashim that they've made ad hoc? Your aron. Your kruvim, and your tchorim, and your achbarim. Oh, it's a whole pantheon over there. V'anshem beit shemesh alu olot, v'izbuchu zvachim, v'chamisha sanei plishtim, and the plishtim are watching, and they said they accepted our guilt offering. They accepted our asham. What was our asham? The golden mice and the rats and the golden tchorim. And not only did they count, did they take them, but they sang about them. The Eile Tchorei Zahav, Asher Ashivu Plishtim, Asham La Hashem. These are the golden achbarim that we took, or tchorim that we took as a guilt or sin offering to God. La Ashdod, Echad. La Aza, Echad. La Ashkelon. It's a whole ceremony. They're singing. V'achbarei Zahav, Mispar Echad, Kol Sarei Plishtim. No, what's next? Vayach b'anshei Beit Shemesh. By the time they finish singing about the achbarim and the tchorim, vayach b'anshei Beit Shemesh. The next thing you know, there's a plague. Ki ra'u ba'aron, because they looked at the aron. What does it mean that they looked at the aron? It means they didn't understand anything more than the plishtim understood. It wasn't just the fact that they saw. The plishtim also saw the aron. They saw the aron from afar in the battlefield, and they said, these are the gods of Israel. They did exactly what the plishtim did. They took the aron, they took it together with their mice, and together with the achbarim, they stuck it on the stone, and you turned it into one pantheon of idolatry. And you've got the kruvim and the aron dancing around in a pagan ritual. That's the tragedy of it. I would have no doubt in my mind, it would not surprise me in the least, if in every city that the Aron reached in the cities of the Plishtim, the numbers that were killed were 50,000 apiece. Wouldn't surprise me in the least. Why? We don't know how many died. We have no knowledge. It doesn't tell us. But the parallel to what happened to the Plishtim in Ashkelon and in Ashdod and in Gat, what happened to the people of Beit Shemesh, is here. And here we have the number. 50,000. I come back to the original question I started with. Where else did we have close to 50,000? Says the Radak. Says the Radak Ramban, I don't remember. Back in the first day when they were battling in Eben Ezer, and they took the Aron out of the Mishkan, and they brought it into the battlefield, and 4,000 after the first day, and 30,000 after the second day, and by the time you added the civilians, and the Kohanim, and everybody else, and the Flu B'Charev, you ended up with close to 50,000, says the Radak, in similar numbers to what happened in Beit Shemesh. Why? See, here I'm conjecturing. Till now, I think is factual. Now I'll conjecture. You know why they were so devastatingly defeated in Beit Shemesh, in Eben Ezer? Because when they took the Aron into the battlefield, they took it into the battlefield together with every other deity that they had taken with them into the battlefield. You're dealing with a people that had reached 400 years of idolatry. To them, it's one deity or one god or another. The idolatry is rampant. This is 400 years of Sefer Shoftim at its best, at its worst. At the nadir of Sefer Shoftim, they've reached a point where they're worshipping one god after another. They're hedging their bets. Do you remember the story, the introduction to Yiftach? Where they're worshipping the gods of Ammon, the gods of Moab, and the gods of Canaan, and the gods of the Plishtim, and they're just hedging their bets all around. So each one's got a different deity in his pocket. Each one's carrying an idol in his pocket. And when those idols weren't enough, because they were losing the battle, so what did they say? Oh, we need one more, or two more. Let's go grab the Aron with the Kruvim. And add that to our strength on the battlefield. And now they've taken the Aron with the Kruvim, and it's not just the fact that they took the wrong Aron. They took the Kruvim and transformed them into real Avodah Zarah, together with all the other pantheon of deities and gods that they had. Not they didn't have Achbarim and Tchorim, but they had whatever else they had in their pockets. Yeah. Nobody bothered to purify the camp before they put the Kruvim in their midst.
But surely the Kruvim wouldn't be facing each other and they would be seeing that there was a problem.
It's too midrashic for Tanakh. Tanakh is based on the whole notion that they're facing each other or not facing each other is a midrashic piece of that. I don't know what to do with that right now. But
the other arm doesn't have Kruvim, right?
The arm that they took into battle on a regular basis? It's just a box. Right. If it was even that, I mean, it's not clear what that was, but if there even was such a thing. It's machloket if there even was such a thing. But at this point, they take the Kruvim into the battlefield, the whole story turns around. And I'll conclude with one pasuk, one verse. Take a look in the next parak, when Shmuel finally gets the people, years later, after the battle's over, after the dust is settled, after the Aron is now hiding in Kiryat Yarim, 100,000 Israelites later, Korban Shiloh, everything's wiped, destroyed, now they have to rebuild. So Pasuk, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Shmuel o kol beit Yisrael lemor. Shmuel says to the people, if you really at this point do tshuva, and your tshuva is finally sincere, if you are really sincere, the first thing you have to do is get rid of the idols. You're sitting there with these Baal and Ashtaroth idols in your pocket. You gotta get rid of the idols. This is the olive base. This is the leftover from Sefer Shoftim. This is the piece of the puzzle that's been missing since the beginning of the story. Prepare your hearts, turn your hearts to God. Two words. V'ivduhu levado. You have to make a choice. It's not enough to serve God. You have to make a choice. You have to serve God alone. One God. Not one amongst many. Right? You can't come to the Church of Moab and Ammon on Monday and Thursday, and to the Mishkan on Shabbos. It doesn't work. You got to pick. That's what Eliyahu tried to tell them in Har HaKarmel. You can't hedge your bets. Got to pick. Then you have a hope that God will save you from the hands of the Plishtim. Then the story turns around. They finally realize this message after 400 years. Then the story turns around. But it's cost at a great, great cost. And that, I think, is the story of the Battle of Evans, part one.